Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for yet another episode. And this is a very special episode as we are doing an 80s WWA reunion. Joining me for the special occasion is Dr. Jerry Graham Jr., Saul Creechman, Bobby Colt, Greg Lake, Stormy Granzig, and Mad Max. So let's take a break, get right to it, and when we come back, we will have that 80s WWA reunion. Filsinger Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit FilsingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Filsinger Games, FilsingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams. All right, welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. In this episode, we have a very special event. I am hosting a 1980s WWA reunion featuring several of the most prominent alumni from that time period in the promotion. This will be fun, should be full of great stories, and some of these guys haven't had a chance to speak together in a long, long time. So let's meet the guests. First, we have the international playboy, Bobby Colt, a former WWE heavyweight champion in 1983 and a WWA tag team champion in 1985. Hello, Bobby.
How you doing?
All right. And then we have Stormy Granzig, another former WWE heavyweight champion in 1984 and a WWA tag team champion in 1985. Hello, Stormy.
How's it going, Dave, and everybody else?
Very good. We have one half of the World Warriors, Mad Max, also known as John Richmond, who held the WWA tag titles in 1984 with his partner, Super Max, Sam DeCero. Hello, John.
How you doing?
Doing very good. And then, of course, we have Saul Creechman, also known as Scott Romer, renowned photographer and former wrestling manager. Hey, Scott, Saul, whichever one I'm going to go by.
It doesn't matter to me, but thank you for having me as a guest.
Absolutely. We have Greg Lake, a stalwart in Indianapolis and Portland, but oddly, someone who's never been seen in the same room as the WWA's The Patriot.
Yep.
I don't know. He split when I came. Whenever I got into the territory, he left. And when I leave the territory, he'd come back.
Yeah.
Hey, two of your people on there, I had their first matches with me.
Really?
And that would be John Richmond. I don't know if I had your first match, but I started training John. Mad Max, a big, by the way, he's a big Curly fan. Very big Curly fan. And Saul Creechman.
Hey.
They had their first two matches, and Dr. Graham, we go way back together.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you, Greg, because when I worked with you, I never felt a thing. You were very light on me.
I hit you so hard, I knocked the nerves out of your spine, probably.
Well, and speaking of last, but absolutely never the least, the most highly educated man and professional wrestler, and a former 5-time WWE Tag Team Champion, Dr. Jerry Graham Jr. Doctor, you used to be big.
I'm still big. Wrestling has gotten small.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So, all right, guys, thank you. And we're going to kind of be free-flowing with this. I'll throw a few questions here and there, but if you guys have stories or you guys want to interact, just go for it. That's all we're here for, right? I know a lot of you, like I said, have not talked in a long time. That's okay.
I got one.
Go for it. What do you got?
Well, we just had the passing of Bobby Boyer, Bobby Bald Eagle.
That's right.
And the first time I wrestled for Dick the Bruiser, when I was just Jerry Joffe Jabroni, I tag teamed with Bobby against the Valiant Brothers. That was my first match ever working for Dick the Bruiser. Bobby was my tag team partner at the Indianapolis Convention Center. So I just thought it was just a note, that Bobby and me went way back.
Well, and I used to travel with Bobby to the independent shows in Springfield, Illinois, Lanphier High School, and Fort Wayne, the Memorial Coliseum. We would drive together, and he always had a Bruiser story, how Bruiser screwed him and stuff like that. I guess one of his big things that he used to talk about was a big sellout crowd at the beautiful air-conditioned convention center, and him only getting maybe $100 and him returning the money to Dick instead of
$50.
I don't know. Greg probably has more of an insight. You want to than I do, but I remember him bitching. I've had my share of medical problems, so if the mind is a little skippy, please forgive me. Go ahead, Greg. Do you remember that?
Oh, just real quickly. Oh, good. Well, did you have a story, Bobby?
No, and you mentioned $100. I said, I'm amazed that I think you only seen $100 the whole time, maybe three times. So yeah.
That was 10 years before you. But I could remember Stormy Granzik on getting ready to quit, and all he had on his body was a protein bar for the whole day. Remember that, Stormy? That is how desperate and destitute we were, but at least we got something. And there were a lot of promoters that, that weren't as consistent. At least with Bruiser, you got something.
I got a great payoff story. I used to work for the Sheik. So you guys are complaining about the Bruiser. I used to work three matches in a day and get $45. But the first time I went to Hammond, Indiana for Bruiser, I got handed $75. I thought, Jesus, must be a mistake. I better give some of this back. Nobody gets $75 for one match.
Well, Bob Luce paid me $65, but that included setting up the ring too.
Well, you were getting paid too much. That was right. They should have given more to me, less to you.
Yeah, so you did a lot of that in the 80s, right? The driving the truck, setting up the ring.
I did a little. Me and Calypso Jim, and sometimes Gilbert Guerrero was with us. And I think a few times Bobby Colt was with us as well. We have that brotherhood. But, as far as wrestling, my virginity was taken by Greg Lake. I knew nothing. I knew nothing except what I saw.
Not like that. Not like that.
Well, no, they used to, every once in a while, somebody in a batter oil would stick their finger in my butt. You know what I mean? I didn't know who grabbed my thing, but that was just part of it,
Now it's time to speak up, guys.
No, Steve Regal.
Oh yeah, there's a reason I've stayed in it this long. I'm teasing.
No, and that yeah. I don't know who that was. It mentioned Steve Regal. There's another name, right? Someone we found out recently.
Yes.
Passed away recently, and was a regular in the early to mid '80s in the WWE. Teamed with Spike Huber a lot.
Well, Jerry would know Steve Regal quite well because he worked on a lot of shows in the '70s with Steve Regal and Spike Huber. As well,
they were called the Young Lions when they were a tag team, and they were as good a tag team as you want. They both knew the business. They both knew how to get a match over. I was so getting a lot of guys that wanted to get themselves over. They didn't care about the show. They didn't care about the match. But Regal and Huber always. We had matches. I was teamed up with Wojo then because Don Kent hadn't come in yet, and Wojo hadn't gotten the belt yet. So. And I'm telling you, those guys knew when to sell, knew when to come back. They knew how to work with you. And they were, like I said, Steve Regal, he was a little cocky, but he had a right to be cocky. Because as a great man once said, Frank Lloyd Wright, I have a choice in life, honest arrogance or false humility. Mm-hmm. And Steve Regal was good, so he took honest arrogance. But he was not overbearing. He was a good guy. I loved him. I loved working with him. I loved with Spike Huber. I like both of them. They were terrific, terrific. They knew what was going on in the ring, and so many didn't. And for whatever that's worth.
Yeah. We tried to make contact with Spike, and Scott and I both, we didn't get a response. Wanted him to maybe hop in, but it didn't look like it's going to happen.
And I thought Rip Lugo was going to come in as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happened with him. I don't know. Another name from the 80s that just touching base with you guys that I recently kind of made some cut was Max Blue. I was trying to reach out, trying to make contact with him, and I did finally connected with his son because there was a lot of people didn't know what happened to Max, right? How he was doing. He is still alive, but Max, he's not doing real great. He's having a lot of some cognitive abilities lacking and things like that, but he is still alive. And his son has said he's kind of up and down, so hopefully he'll get some. A good period, and he said he thinks his dad would definitely be interested in talking to
Max. Him. Was and I think Max was underused, and he had a great ability. Amen. He really knew how to wrestle and give each a training session. What's the word I'm looking for? But he was a great technician and in the ring, and I saw him. Maybe 20 years ago at an Indianapolis Indians game, working security.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He was, we got to talking, and it was, it was really good to see him. And that was the last time I had seen him. It was a good 20 years ago.
He's a good worker, good hand, very good hand in the ring.
Yeah. And some of you guys kind of represent what we would maybe have called in the 80s, some of the younger talent, right? Because maybe we can put that in quotes for a few of you, but anyway, they were still, Bruiser was still using guys like Moose and Bobo and stuff like that. But there were some of you guys coming in that were a little fresher, a little newer. Did you feel, cause right. A lot of people have complained that maybe Bruiser didn't use the younger talent like he should have. Maybe he should have given a little more spotlight, a little more shine. What do you guys think? Some of you experiencing that firsthand?
Well, I think you're right because, a principle of booking from what I learned from talking to the greats. Like I said, everything I learned from the great same guys in the main events, no matter how good they are, as George Cannon used to say, you got a movie theater, you can only play Gone with the Wind so many times, then you got to change even if the picture's not as good. And a lot of promoters make the mistake of keeping the same guys on top. You should have things brewing underneath. And when the guys blow off the mat, that's the final match in the program. The next group of guys, whether it's a single or tag, should be ready to go. And you got to keep things rotating. And I've seen a lot of promoters not do that. And I've seen a lot of them do that, And it's something that you talk about using the younger talent. Just put me out of the picture. There's a lot of young guys there that could have really gotten a push, be the guy underneath, ready to go to the top. And it never happened, really.
Yeah. Nope. Go ahead. Who was that?
Well, we also saw during our heyday when I was doing Saul Creechman, the WWWF coming in, running their television against ours, And then I think one time they ran a show on the same day we ran a show, which really killed our attendance to nearly nothing. And once again, we still got paid, but again, the fans were only used to seeing Dick the Bruiser and his TV brand, and then all of a sudden, the bigger, stronger guys started showing up on Vince's TV that he was buying Indianapolis time for.
Yeah, and I do want to come back to that, but let me ask Bobby Colt. We talked about some of the newer talent, fresher talent, a different faces, right? You got a run with the belt in '83, and I talked to you before. You said that you were kind of surprised by that, right? And you were honored when you got that run with the heavyweight title. What did you think of that time when Bruiser let you know that he was going to give you a chance with it?
Well, I mean, I was totally surprised. I mean, originally when I came over, I was only going to do a few shows, just fill in and stuff, and then I wrestled Bobo in one show, and then wrestled Spike and Steve in a tag team match, and next thing I know, I get a phone call, and it's Bruiser saying, want you over here in Indianapolis Saturday. And it's like, okay, so I expect to come back and do some more jobs. But all of a sudden, they just decided to put me over, and led to the championship. I found out, to be honest with you, when I found out that I was going to get the belt, I was doing a AWA show in Chicago, and Greg Gagne asked me if I wanted to come work for AWA. Well, at that time, I tried to be loyal, and I told him, I said, so, I would discuss it with Bruiser, being that he did take me on and stuff, and there's no contract or anything ever. But when I talked to Dick, that same night, he said, no. He goes, I'm going to put the belt on you. You can't be up here. So yeah, I felt kind of honored the fact that I was, going to get the belt from, a legend in the business, Dick the Bruiser, and he had confidence that we could do some business and stuff. And I think, we drew some good houses, along with all the talent, not just me and Bruiser, but all the talent combined is what I drew, not just, me. So I never had that illusion that I was the show. So.
Well, yeah, and another guy that got a run with the belt, Stormy Grenzing. What you came in, right? Kind of there mid in the in the decade there, early to mid. Did you have any trouble because you were new to the business? Did you have any trouble acclimating into the locker room, and how did you feel like guys perceived you coming in?
Well, first of all, the crowd hated me because they assumed that I beat their hero, Spike Huger. So that didn't help me any. They really hated me big time. And then everybody else there, Jerry and Bobby and the whole crew, they really had to carry me because I was so green. I didn't know what was going on, and they did their best, even though I probably made a lot of mistakes. But basically, they had to talk to me the whole match. Because I didn't know what was going on myself, really. I was so green, be like handing somebody that looked good on stage a guitar, but he couldn't even play the guitar. So I guess that's pretty much where I was. But everybody carried me. Jerry carried me. Bobby carried me many times. The whole group carried me, So Sal carried me even when we had tag team matches against his group, the Mack brothers, and Sal did a great job. He came in. I really didn't know him. I didn't know him before that, but he came in and did a great job right away. So pretty much for me, everybody carried me, and and it was really just an honor to be in the locker room with them. It's like I was in there with a bunch of all stars, and I was just a rookie. So that's exactly how it went for me.
Yeah, Stormy, did you ever feel that I'm just replacing Spike? Kind of, did you ever get that feeling? Did anybody ever put that on you?
Oh man, yeah, the crowd hated me. Dick even had to come out to the ring a couple of times to calm the crowd down because they were booing me so hard and heavy. Because you know, I beat their hero or one of their heroes, Bruiser and Spike, were the big heroes there. So when they thought that, you know, the way everything was told, that I think they told them that I beat Spike in Kansas City or something. Then I don't know. Then of course, you know, it was a phantom match and it never happened. And you know, then Spike left town, and you know, Bruiser, I don't know if he was just looking for somebody to give it to Spike, you know, and then put the belt on me because, you know, I was in good shape. You know, I think that probably had a lot to do with it, because I really wasn't a good worker, you know. And I got better because working with Jerry Graham and Wojo match after match after match, you know, then, you know, little by little by little, you get a little bit better. And like I said, everybody that you're talking to tonight carried me, even John Richmond. Me and him had some great matches. You know, we're both a little bit green, but we gave it everything we had, you know, for the crowd, for sure.
Yeah, so what about the
punch from the younger guys? We were just talking when Bobby Colt had the belt and Spike and Stormy. And
yeah,
we did get a little upgrade in the houses. So we were talking about, yeah, when they started letting a few guys go, I noticed that there was an increase. Bobby did a really good job, and so did Stormy. He was a little green, like he said, but we worked with him, and he got good. And then Spike, before they had the falling out, he was doing good for us. So the younger guys were starting to get their move. I think Dick could see what he needed to do, but then comes the WWF, and you might as well just say, you know, Harry Carey.
which right? It's a different approach back then, though, right? Like now, everybody's getting their own, right? Put, you know, getting your stuff in. Back then, it was more of a make your opponent look good, right? So, I mean, that's what helped guys like Stormy and stuff, right, who said he was green and new, is working with guys like you, Doc, and everything else. Look at that. Greg showing us a poster up there. And
Dick the Bruiser versus Bobby Colt. Sorry to cut in.
There you go. That's fine. Yeah. And there's, I see Stormy and a six-man there. Who's in the six-man? Oh, yeah. With yeah, there's John's in that one. And oh, also Greg Lake.
Yeah. That was my first name at the beginning, also Greg Lake.
Yeah,
that's old, but that was, you know, several years after I got started as a photographer. I was allowed at the TV stations, as long as I helped carry those big 70 millimeter tape cassettes to Bruiser's car. But that was during a TV taping that I cherished that picture.
Yeah. And a couple of you have mentioned it, right? In this time period, we're seeing the WWE, the WWF at that time, hitting that national expansion, right? And it's not just them, right? It's just TV in general is nationalizing, right? With the spread of cable TV and everything. You guys that are there with Bruiser, how did he view that? Did he say, oh, it's a fad, right? Everybody will stick to the local guys. Everybody will stay loyal to the local stations.
No, he would sit there. He would say that those guys are trying to screw me. And if you work for them, you'll never work for me again.
I don't know how many times I've been told that and I ended up working for them again.
Yeah. So, but I was going to ask that, Jerry, right? We pre-show, Scott mentioned it. You had the tryout with WWF, right? I think it was in St. Louis, right? And you went in and did the TV taping for them. How did Bruiser take that when you went in and did that?
That's Jerry's
question. Jerry.
I apologize.
That's okay. Yeah, for you, Jerry, when you did the tryout and the TV taping for WWF.
The thing is, I had an arrangement with Bruiser that I could book myself anywhere that he didn't go, as long as I gave him first dibs on a date. So George Cannon, I was working with Bruiser and Cannon, and Cannon tied in with the WWF, and Ernie Roth had just died, and they were looking for a manager. So George Cannon cut a demo of me doing a promo, you know, a mythical match that Wojo was going to wrestle Bob Backlund. And basically, Backlund used to do this thing with a stomach roller, to do a million reps with the stomach roller. And so I took the stomach roller out, and I said, you know what, Bob Backlund, you can do 10,000 reps with this thing, but Wojo can't do one. But you know what he can do? He can stick it right down your throat and twist it and pull your intestines out. So anyway, they seemed to like the interview, so they made me a manager and sent me to Chase Hotel. Now, at this time, I didn't say anything to Dick because St. Louis was not part of Dick's, and I didn't know where it was going to go.
Yeah.
And I got there and things didn't go as well as I would like it to go. And I don't know how many times I told that story. Everybody's ever watched any podcast I've been on knows what's happened. So I'm not going to go into that.
Yeah. Yeah. We have an episode with me and Jerry in the archives. If anybody wants it, where we talk just about that taping, that people can listen to that. And you tell the full story.
A horrible thing. You know, if they didn't want me, don't book me, you know, or if it's over, say that's not what we're looking for. Thanks for coming. Oh, by the way, Vern Gagne was the first promoter ever to thank me for coming to a match. And I said, what a nice thing to do. It didn't cost him a penny. He didn't even know me that well. And they knew my amateur coach, Dick Torrio. But I started doing that to all my wrestlers. And I started running my shows. I'd always thank him. I said, thank you for coming. How much does that cost to be polite and courteous? You know, I thank everybody for always coming. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We were talking about St. Louis, and when the WWF invaded, I became the photographer for the Japan's Gong Wrestling magazine, and that was my start with my WWF career. I was at all their shows all around the country photographing, but all my pictures were only to be published in the country of Japan.
Yeah.
So, and I gained a lot of power at that time. I was a ringside photographer, and you know, they weren't allowing after anybody up at their shows, and so they contacted the Japanese and bought one of my images, which appeared on the front page of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and that was the end of my WWF career after it. Couple of years of shooting with them, but I was able to shoot with all the territories because I wasn't in conflict with anybody with my work being published in Japan.
Yeah. Yeah. It's someone we haven't heard from a lot, the strong silent type, Mr. John Richmond over here. He's on here. Speaking of that 80s boom, right? One of the products of the 80s boom was the Road Warriors, and Mr. John Richmond, you were managed by Scott at that time, teaming with Sam DeCero, and you got billed as the Max, the World Warriors, or the Max Brothers, with kind of a Road Warrior gimmick. Yeah, and there, you know, Scott's showing a picture there. What did you think at the time of getting that kind of gimmick with the face paint and the big guy?
The Mad Max originally with the face paint wasn't bad, you know, because it was legit. I guess if you want to say that, that's the right word. But when he put us together and put that gimmick on it, I mentioned the last time we spoke, I hated that gimmick, hated it with a passion. And I look back at that picture that was, Saul Scott showed earlier when we were offline there. Mm-hmm. And the look on my face was... You can see Sam was pretty excited about it, but I hated it. And I really thought it was a blatant ripoff. But you're young and you're trying to get your leg in, you know, get your foot in the door and learn and grow. And so we've all done things we don't really like doing, especially in this business. But yeah, I did not, I couldn't wait to break free of that gimmick. So
yeah, well, even regardless of that, though, you and Sam made a hell of a team, and then you throw in Saul.
I think the Max Brothers was fine. That was great.
Yeah, yeah.
Sam could work. I couldn't.
Yeah, well, and then you throw in Saul, right? Saul there getting the heat, and doing the talking. It was a nice package, and you guys had a good run, and and then of course you guys went on to do some stuff in Chicago and stuff, right, together, and with Sam and stuff like that, and you got to put your own stamp on it a little bit.
Yeah, we went to Japan together, and you know, so the Max Brothers. I love tagging with Sam. He was a heck of a good worker. I'm still trying to figure out how to work.
That's cool.
But yeah, I never considered myself a good worker.
God,
I was
like to bust himself open hard way too. You know, that was something that I was.
Yeah. I've mentioned that story, and it's a very comical, you know, with Greg and with Dick there at the Armory in Lafayette, and you know, Greg and I met at the gym there when I was just got out of the service and was going to Purdue, and I met Greg down there at the Levee, and we're training, and we got to be buddies, you know. And it's like sort of training together, and then he's like, "Hey, you ever thought about wrestling?" I go, "No." Yeah, never crossed my mind. And he said, "Well, he taught me some stuff there, taking some rolls and stuff in the gym, on the floor, the hard floor." And he come to the match tonight. So I went to the match, and he's, you know, Dick and Dave McLean are counting money down there, and he's like, Greg goes, Dick, he goes, "Hey, Dick, this is the guy I was telling you about." And Dick just kind of looks up, kind of out of the corner of his eye, and goes, "He'll do." So that was my introduction into professional wrestling. I filled the uniform for the
That's
night.
right. That's right.
So
And
that
well,
was.
speaking of, you're talking right about, Lafayette's own Greg Lake up here. Hadn't heard a lot from him either. And Greg, let's settle the controversy. We talked about it just a touch before we started recording. Let's
How
settle the
do I hit the
controversy.
chat? How do I get my face on, or do you
You're on
people?
there. We see you,
You're
Greg.
on.
We see you.
Oh, okay. I just see me up in the corner.
That, don't avoid it. I said controversy, and now you're trying to
Sit
avoid
up
it
just a
now.
little bit. Sit
Yeah.
up.
I'll try to
Sit up a little
see.
bit. Your chin's up. Sit up.
Up. Oh, okay.
There you go. There you go. Chin up. There
I'm
you
laying down on a
go.
bed. I'm
Hold
chilling.
the
Yeah. Did
belt.
you have anything specific, or you want me to
Yeah,
just go off and?
I want you to settle the controversy once and for all. Greg Lake, who is the WWE's Patriot?
I heard of a Scott Romer.
Is
And
that
because I
right?
wait, I can't say that because oops. Scott, we were in a battle royal that Scott was talking about. And I guess I was the Patriot. Oops, I mean
Oh,
yeah.
there we are.
Anyway, yeah, it's yeah, like nobody knew, but it was me.
Great.
Hey, John Richmond, real quick. We used to remember we did lockups and stuff at Purdue on the
Yeah.
near the golf course, I think. We
Yeah.
did that at first. We were just doing like stand-up lockups and arm bars and some basic stuff on the Purdue green, right next to the across the street from the golf course. John was really good. When I saw him working out and like doing what 500-pound squats or something, I said, Dick's got to learn about this guy. And we went, remember Dick? In fact, Dick, I think that same time said, bring this guy next Tuesday for interviews. I mean, it was like he never even saw your work, but Dick knew also, like me, when I saw you doing those squats, and you just had a look about you that you looked like you would be a great worker. I don't know why, but of course it didn't turn out that way. No. But then, okay, so we went, and Dick did, he did some interviews with Bruiser, and he didn't really speak. It was Dave McLean did all the talking. But yeah, it was pretty exciting. Real quick story about Wilbur Snyder. Very first time that John and I went down to do interviews in Indy. Wilbur Snyder, never met Wilbur before, and he had a bad stuttering problem, and it took him probably 30 seconds to say, "I'm Wilbur Snyder," and I'm not making fun of the guy, because if you ever watched his promos, he never talked more than a few lines at a time. He never went on and on. But no, Wilbur was a great guy. There's still a debate of who the better payoff guy was when
Bruiser.
Wilbur or Bruiser would be at the show. Either would either on a smaller spot shows, it would either be Wilbur or Bruiser. And I usually got probably $35 on an average from Bruiser. And I think I got 40 from Wilbur once. The most payoff, and I'm not expecting anybody else to say what they got paid because it's none of my business. But the most I ever made for Bruiser was $140. Okay, and that was at the Expo Center. Anyway, that's the answer you're looking for is Wilbur Snyder. Well, never mind. Was I going to say? Okay, I get off on these tangents.
That's okay.
Saul is
Okay, that's your
Saul
drinking
also.
problem.
Scott's a natural for the business. John is. Jerry, I think everybody on here was a natural for the business, from what I've seen. since I've been working since 1972. So met a lot of workers and all these guys, that are still worth their weight in gold. So
tell them about my initiation.
Oh, about the Battle Royal?
Yes, the initiation.
Oh, yeah, sure. First Battle Royal that Scott was in that I remember, everybody, including John, would smack everybody took their turn giving a chop to Scott, okay, Saul Creechman, and they would chop the snot out of him. Like John would smack him as hard as he could, I think. He was bleeding. And then Sam DeCero, Mad Supermax, would smack Scott as hard as he could. Everybody went around, but I was what? You, it was me.
You and Jose were the only ones that did it light.
Yeah. We felt sorry for him.
I think Bobby got me too, and Jerry Graham, our Jerry Valiant, his sounded like a bullet, a gunshot, but his didn't hurt either, but he made it sound good.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe I was so sore I couldn't take, and I couldn't feel it anymore. But it was great. And, they were trying to get me to quit, Bruiser's son-in-law, But I wouldn't. I stayed with it and then started eventually gaining the respect. They started working for me. And all I had to do to be really, he made it easy was Dr. Jerry Graham. He said, I had a match with Chris Carter. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I was getting big time. I had to go like 10, 15 minutes or whatever. He said, just listen to me. And I did, and it went as smoothly. I could have gone an hour listening to Dr. Jerry Graham. So yeah, I want to thank you all for the brotherhood and reuniting with each and every one of you. Wrestling is all I've got. That and boxing and the memories I have are just fantastic. I still live for them, Shows you what kind of life I have.
and you mentioned Chris Carter, right? I'd hope, he was supposed to have been on here, but probably had some technical difficulties. And I do want to talk about Chris, though, because as a fan, I always thought Chris Carter was absolutely, through the 80s, was the soul of the WWA. I don't think you had a better baby face. I mean, I know a better baby face during that time period than Chris Carter. And tell me with you guys, right? You all know Chris. You've all worked with Chris. Tell me a little bit about him, right? Here's your chance to whatever you want to say, positive, negative, whatever you want to do. But I think Chris Carter is so unheralded and deserves a little more praise than what he gets.
I gave Chris his first break. I didn't train him, but I went to Bruiser. And they were using him as a job guy. Then he took some time off. So I went back to Bruiser and I said, we're talking about the younger guys. I said, Chris Carter, you should give him a little push and just see what happens. You can always get rid of him if it doesn't work out.
Yep.
And Spike Huber came to me and he was really praising Carter's work. And I'll tell you, I know Chris Carter better than anybody. And I'll tell you, his strong point was, he could do it. You tell him what you wanted done, and he could do it. He could do it right. He could do it at the right time. He could write facial expressions, write everything. But he needed to be told what to do. But I can always count on him. You see, one time he'd want to try something, and I'd say, no, Chris, please, just do it this way. And then he'd say, you were right. But Chris was an excellent hand, as was everybody here, as was Greg Lake, as was Bobby Colt, as was Mad Max. I'm not degrading anybody else, but I was personally involved with Chris Carter. And the one thing, he was really as good as anybody in this business. I don't care where you go. He could milk a tag better than anybody. He could get the heat, just not quite make it, the baby face tag. They'd have like somebody like Bruiser or Bobo for a partner that obviously going to kill us if they could get in the ring. And he just didn't quite make it. He could just absolutely do that better than anybody. And it's not better, as good as anybody. There's no such thing as better than anybody in wrestling. So that's highest you can get is as good, because there's always somebody as good as you. So, but he was excellent at that. He could really milk a tag.
Well, like you would say in other sports, right? You mentioned how he would listen and take care. He's coachable, right? What he didn't have an experience, he would listen to those that did.
And we did have experience. If we wanted to do something technical or took a little back and forth, he would always be right there. Always be right there. They could count him. But a lot of the big name wrestlers would screw up. One time I was working with Ernie Ladd in Honolulu, and he screwed up the finish. I mean, and he was a great worker, but you know, everybody screws something up, you know, sometimes. But Chris was there. I mean, that's my contribution. You want to talk about Chris? Somebody else might have something to say.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned him as a tag wrestler. I mean, I don't know if there was anybody he didn't hold the tag titles with through the '80s. I don't know how many times he held them. So many different partners over the years. But anybody else? Anybody else want to share a memory of Chris?
I worked with Chris a couple times, at least, probably more than that. He was always a night off, very easy. And I was the heel at the time, as the allegedly Patriot at the time. I worked with him in Cobo Hall, and Chris and I. And he had kind of a night. He was kind of off that night, wrestling-wise. But other than that, no. I mean, other times, he was just fantastic. He listened to you. I was the heel at the time. And, he'd listen and do what you wanted to do, and easy. And, yeah, great worker. Again, he's one of the people that belonged in the business for sure. But that's my thing. He's a great worker.
Yeah. I wrestled Chris Carter with Dr. Jerry Graham managing me, and as I mentioned, all I had to do was listen. But we did tear the house down, and that video is on YouTube, I think, thanks to you, Dave Dynasty. And once again, I want to thank you for preserving the history of the WWA and all the effort that you have put through with posting and also on YouTube. So thank you very much.
No problem. And like I said, I appreciate you guys doing things like this. That helps me do that, and it makes it fun.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, who was that? Bobby, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, when you were talking about Chris. Chris was trained by Al Costello, the one half the Kangaroos.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about the first three sessions that it was him and Muhammad Saad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Came down, and I was staying in Michigan at the time, and Al asked me to come down to help him work with Chris and Saad to help train him a little bit and stuff. And then I ended up going back to Ohio. So I didn't finish up, doing anything else with them. But, from the very beginning, you know, he was paying attention, listening, and I mean, of all people to learn from Al Costello, who, you know, when they called him man of a thousand holds, it was true. I mean, the guy, it was amazing. And I mean, he taught me a lot of things on those sessions and stuff too. So, the good doctor said that, you know, he get out there and perform. And so, you know, he was a good hand, along with, you know, as everybody keeps saying, everybody else. And why I'm at it, when you talk about Mad Max, you know, he didn't feel that he was very good. He was good at what he portrayed to be. He wasn't supposed to be a technical wrestler. He was supposed to be a
powerhouse
brawler.
Yeah.
A brawler.
And, some of my best tag matches was with Bo Brazil and myself against him and Sam. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, we had some, I thought we had some really good matches. They're still on YouTube and stuff, but I mean, I enjoyed working with him.
And another name that, of course, we'd be remiss not to talk about. And Jerry, you and I talked, you know, obviously at length, and I know you could talk for hours. But recently, we lost. You know, I mean about this person. We recently lost the great Wojo. And I always say that, right? Because Jerry was, I mean, him and Wojo were best friends. And you can't talk about 80s WWE without talking about the great Wojo and what he meant for the promotion and, you know, holding the title several times. Guys, talk to me, tell me about the great Wojo as a person working with him, whatever else. Greg, go ahead.
Down the hall, yeah, the second door.
I worked with Wojo many, many times. The guy, he did not know his own strength. I can think Jerry can concur with that. He was a strong son of a gun. Not huge, not much bigger than me. In fact, I worked with him, just saw a match not too long ago, and Jerry was on the mic and managing Wojo. And what was I going to say about it? But anyway, I was the Patriot again, or supposedly, a.k.a. Mm-hmm. But anyway, great worker, worked with him many times. First time I ever worked with him, I kept saying he had me on the shoulder breaker for his finish.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I kept saying, don't drop me on my face. Don't drop me on my face. But, you know, at the time it was my first match with him and the guy knew what he was doing, but he's so strong. You wonder sometimes, well, you know, he could snap your limbs at any time, I think, if he wanted to. But no, great worker. The more I worked with him, the more I appreciated him. Definitely. Oh, and then real quickly, I was at some of the shows and Jerry was there too, obviously, where he would take marks out of the audience.
Yeah.
And he would work with marks, you know, fans that would just come up and volunteer. And he just, for the most part, he once in a while, he'd have a little bit of trouble. But yeah, he would take marks out of the audience. Jerry, I think, would pick him out.
For the most part, wasn't that a shoot, though? Am I right?
Yeah, that part was a shoot. With me,
absolutely a shoot. Let me tell you something.
Go ahead.
Not to butt in, but I don't want to let this go. There was an Olympic wrestler that was coaching a high school football team in Brighton, Michigan. They called him the Orange Crush.
Yeah,
was
his yeah.
He was a big, well over 200 pounds, almost as big as Wojo. And he was good enough that he was in the Olympic trial finals. He didn't get to go to the Olympic team, but he was way up there. And they called me and said, they're going to buy a show, but Wojo has to challenge this guy. The building was packed, and the people were hysterical. They thought that the Orange Crush was going to beat Wojo. And I'll tell you something, what saved Wojo that night was that we ignored one basic rule of amateur wrestling, and that was not supposed to stall. Because the idea was they had to pin Wojo in 5 minutes. Wojo didn't have to win. They had to beat Wojo. And if you're stalling a guy of Wojo's caliber, you're never going to pin him. But in a real Olympic match, they're going to call you in 3 seconds if they think you're stalling. But anyway, this guy came out. And I'm thinking as a manager, I just stayed by the ring. If I just touched this guy's foot and tripped him or something, did anything like a heel would do, we'd have been killed. I mean, this was hysterics. And Wojo got a takedown, and the guy got an escape. So had it been scored at the end of 5 minutes, Wojo won 2-1. But that was the closest. When they said there was some guy, that was the closest he came. That guy was fantastic. He made some moves on Wojo, and I'm watching the clock, and the sweat's going down my my brow because I didn't want to lose $10,000, and I made a point to Bruiser that I was putting up the money. And we got out in one piece. So, but
that was the match I was talking about. That was the match I was talking about, I think. One of
Brighton, Michigan?
Yes, yeah. I was there.
Oh, okay. Well, then you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If that guy would have been a worker, we could have come back and sold out again. But they had an angle on the crowd would have killed us. I mean, they were guys, they're all farmers, ready to go, and they were behind this guy. There's no way we just had to let things go. I was thinking about having a talk with them. Well, let's do this again and sell out again. That's, but I don't think he was the type. He had the right disposition. And the crowd would have been a real problem. I'm done. Yeah.
Who else wants to share some Wojo memories? Stormy.
Well, you know how
Scott. I was fortunate to be at Jerry Graham's 75th birthday party where he had Wojo and why can't I remember his name? Who was the other guy? Shane,
Andy Shane.
Andrews. So, I was glad to to see him, and it meant a lot to be a part of the birthday celebration too.
It was my girlfriend threw that. My girlfriend at the time, she paid for everything. I'm too cheap to throw a party like that, but it was a good time, and that was all. But I was going to tell you, I got Wojo to come down to work for Bruiser, but none of these guys wanted to touch Wojo. They were afraid of him. But then George Cannon calls Wojo, Bruiser, and says, I got you booked for the main event with Wojo at Cobo. But he showed up. He showed up, and Wojo and Bruiser tore the house down. And we were averaging $4,000 or $5,000 at Cobo, which wasn't very good. Bruiser and Wojo did $20,000. And Bruiser, he fell in love with Wojo that match, and he brought him down, and then he gave Wojo the run. But that's how Wojo, everybody was afraid of Wojo. They didn't realize that he just wanted to make money. He had the right attitude. He never said, you know, I all these guys, they don't want to do a job. They don't want to do business. They shouldn't be in a business.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be in a business. As anybody knows that worked for me or with me, I did as many jobs as anybody, and I never lost my appeal with the crowd. In fact, you made a study of this. Muhammad Ali's biggest gates was after somebody beat him. And then the return match, whether it was Leon Spinks, whether it was Ken Norton, whether it was Joe Frazier, sometimes a loss can help you draw a crowd. If you're looking to draw a crowd, or if you're looking to get yourself over, I heard Bobby Heenan say something once, very exact. There's guys would rather have the belt for $50 a match than do jobs for $500 a match. And he wasn't kidding. Me, yeah. I've do the jobs for $500 a match because everything yeah. I did was profit oriented. This is a business like anything else. And if you're going to screw up the flow of the show, the first time I wrestled Bobo Brazil, he beat me in 10 seconds on television. They rang the bell. I got headbutted in bed. A couple years later, we were wrestling in Springfield, Illinois, and went to a draw. And I said, geez, Bo, thanks for selling me. And he says, that's the name of the game. You get the match over. You don't get yourself over. You get the match over.
Exactly.
He was 100% right. If you're not there to get the match over, go home. And if so many guys want to get themselves over, you do both. You get yourself over by getting the match over. People want to enjoy the match, you got yourself over.
Yeah.
No matter what the finish was. And that's my opinion, and I'm stuck with it.
Yeah. Stormy, we haven't heard from you in a while. You have some memories of Wojo? Are you still there? I think you're muted, Stormy. Your mic's muted. I don't know if you're there still or not, but.
Can you hear me now?
There you are. Yeah, you want to share some Wojo memories?
Yeah, well, you know what? Wojo, you know, usually he was being managed by Jerry when we worked together, but, you know, and Wojo was a lot more experienced than me, but I always felt like we put on a pretty good match, and he seemed to be happy after the match all the time. So, and I felt like, you know, I did my job if Jerry and Wojo were happy. They carried me. But at least I didn't hold him back too much. And I loved working with Wojo. He was a great guy. And, you know, he's dearly missed by so many. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jerry mentioned that, you know, a lot of guys might have been scared of Wojo. I think it's because Wojo didn't portray anything. What Wojo was, that was him, right? He could back up what he was on TV. He wasn't portraying a character. That was Wojo, right? I mean, he could back that up. Bobby, how about, we had heard from you. You have any Wojo memories?
Yeah, working with Wojo was, it's already been mentioned. I mean, he, anytime you lock up, you could feel his strength. I mean, again, mentally, I don't think he ever got away from that. Leastwise when I worked him, tends to, you know, lock up to taking it for the fact of being in a match and trying to win. You know, I mean, I never really got away from that competition as far as like, and being a little stiff was good because, you know, we're as close as we were from the fans, you know, we needed that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, back then, I think everybody that's on here it's worked, and we were a lot of times we were a lot stiffer because the people were there with the chops and all that type of stuff. But anyway, but Volja was the good thing about that, he was legit. And when they sit there, whole, you know, Olympic champion, whatever, that brought legitimacy to the matches. And I think that with Stormy, you dropped the belt too, Wojo, and which was, you know, no shame whatsoever, because, you know, you're losing to an Olympic champion. Okay, so I mean, the guy's a legitimate wrestler. He, you know, he's strong, and so there wouldn't have been any type of you know, situation there where you'd say, oh man, I lost to a nobody, you know.
Yeah.
And but and again, it didn't hurt Stormy at all, because he, you know, lost to a guy that's got the Olympic gold and the whole bit. So.
Yep. Yeah. It,
but yeah, he was.
A loss never hurts you if the match is good and the program is right. A loss never hurts you.
Right.
If you get beat every night, that's a different story. But I mean, if you're in a championship match and you lose the belt.
That's funny, Greg.
Well, right, Stormy drops the belt to Matt, to Wojo, right? They want to see if Stormy can get it back from Wojo, right? If it's done right, they want to see the return. To see
let me say something about Wojo. When I worked with Wojo, this is Stormy speaking again, but every time I worked with Wojo, it felt like a night off. He was a real soft worker, in my opinion. You know, he was great, you know. So, I mean, I didn't have any problems with him. I didn't feel like he was stiff. Maybe because I was so stiff, I didn't even notice it. But other than that, I thought he was smooth. You know, I thought it was definitely a night off. And I thought we always had a good match. He seemed to think so, too. You know, it took a while for me to get a little bit better. And Jerry probably took care of both of us, you know, being in the corner. He definitely took care of me even in the match. But I appreciate everything that I learned from all of you guys. But I just want to say, it did feel like a night off when I worked with Wojo. And he, to me, felt like a light worker. But then again, I might have been so stiff, I didn't even notice if he was a little stiff. But he didn't appear to be stiff to me, though. What'd you think, Jerry?
Well, when Wojo first started, he was a babyface. We thought being an Olympic champion and everything, that's how we should promote it. And so me being a heel, I used to work with Wojo. Now, once again, everybody has their own experiences. Maybe because I was his friend, maybe because he knew I was basically a sissy. But whatever it was, he worked loose with me. I mean, he even told me when he was in the amateurs, he said when he was maneuvering around, he was loose anyway. Before I showed him how to be loose as a pro, he says then when he'd throw a move on a guy with everything he had, it would surprise them. He said he'd always be loose, waiting for his move, and then bam. But with me, he suplexed me, he slammed me, he grabbed me in holds, he threw me out of the ring. I don't ever remember feeling excessive pain, but I've had a lot of guys tell me that they have. So maybe because Wojo liked me, because we've been friends since he was in fifth grade. That's when we met, fifth grade. We were friends all the way to the time he passed on. And so maybe he lightened up on me.
Well, I'll tell you something, Jerry. It's Stormy talking again. Well, Joe really spoke highly of you. He said that you two were amateur wrestlers together, and you've known each other since you were kids. And, you know, he really looked up to you. And I thought that was so cool when he told me all that.
Well, that's nice that he would say that. But it's just true. We were friends. And we kept in touch the whole time. And he came to me at Torrio's gym and wanted to turn pro. And before his first session, I got three coaches there, one from University of Toledo and two other coaches. I said, I want you to ask me in front of them to turn pro, because I don't want anybody saying that I took you aside somewhere and talked you into something you didn't want to get involved with, which is exactly what would have happened. I said, oh, that Graham got to Wojo and he's exploiting him. So Wojo asked me in front of the University of Toledo coach, who was Dick Wilson, and then there was Joe Scalzo and Dick Torrio. And he says, Jerry, I want to be a pro wrestler. Will you train me? And I says, yes. Does anybody here think that he's been cajoled? I was really good. And sure enough, the Toledo Blade did a two-part article about what a jerk I was for taking advantage of it. Anyway, there was nothing I could do to people. I knew what was coming. I knew what was coming. Yeah. And then he didn't draw anything as a baby face anyway until he turned heel. Then the thing was not so much that they didn't like him. They were frustrated that he was listening to me. All the fans would take him aside and say, don't listen to Graham. And then finally, when he refused to listen to the fans and he kept listening to me, then eventually he swung completely in his favor. But he uh, he was, his heart was in the business. And I had him up at the gym with Al Costello a little bit. I wanted him to learn from other guys besides me, but he didn't want to drive to Detroit. He only drove up there with me one time. And I said, as Bobby Cole pointed out, you know, Al Costello was excellent. And I think he could have helped Rojo, because I could show him so much, but it's better to learn from a lot of people. I trained with Martino Angelo, Randy Savage and Lanny Poffo and Angelo Poffo and Saul Weingroff and the Samoans. All these guys trained me. And then when I got to my little advanced, I got trained by Bulldog Don Kent and Paul Christie and guys like that. And then I got my PhD training on the beach of Hawaii, Lord James Blairs and King Curtis Iakea. We just laid on the beach. They just told me angles and stuff to do. I called that my PhD course. I've said that before, I know. But I never professed to be anything more than a guy that paid attention to the guys that were geniuses and listened to them, because they were they taught me a lot. And I just worked my way up from bachelor's to master's to PhD with the help of other wrestlers. So I try to pass it on to young guys today. Well, you don't tell me what to do. Sorry, I didn't mean to say anything. I take it back. You know, I got so much of that from the younger guys. When I was young, I listened to guys that just, I appreciate any time they spent with me. But things have changed. But the business seems to be surviving. So once again, they don't need me.
Yeah, surviving maybe, but it's much more finite, isn't it? Right? There's not as many places to work.
I think the fans might like to hear about some dressing room stories with Bruiser and Snyder and Payoffs and and Dennis the Menace, who would supply the beer as admitted into the dressing room.
Okay, well, as I was say, as we start to wind down, let's talk
Bruiser's
a little about that
Japanese beer Snyder. Yeah. You know,
well, you brought it up, Scott. So tell us about Dennis the Menace then.
Well, he, you know, everything had their price. You know, mine was taking the pictures and giving them to the office. And Dennis's was to, he was a smaller blonde guy that worked for a beer distributor that would bring cases of the cheapest beer possible for all the workers to drink. I think it was Falstaff at the time, and provide Bruiser and Snyder with the Japanese really expensive beer. Am I right or wrong?
I've seen the bottles at least.
We would, all the wrestlers would be in one room waiting for their paycheck. It didn't matter if they had a airplane to catch or whatever. you got called in individually and you got your paycheck and then you left. Am I right? After about 2 hours of waiting. Am I right or wrong?
Bruiser would always take a shower at a spot show, or maybe at the expo too. I mean, he'd take a shower, but he wouldn't pay you until after he was showered and dressed and everything else. So you waited for a show would be over at 10, for example. You wouldn't get out there till 11:30.
Yep.
And it was only for $30. What's that?
I said, I wonder why he did that.
Because he could.
Well, you know, and then years later,
I used to pay you after your match. I didn't even wait for the end of the show. I had everything calculated, and you went home with your money. You could leave before the show was over. I could see what the house was. I knew what I was going to pay everybody. Why should you sit around and make people wait?
When we worked for Rip Rogers, he would pay you up front. It was much real, a lot of relief. You know, you could leave after your match.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, hey, Dr. Graham, you brought up the name of somebody that I think you were with me for a long time, but dear friend Don Kent.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And
the older brother I never had. The older brother I never had.
Yeah, but you know what? I always said it wouldn't have been a Bobby Cole without Don Kent.
Well, I'm telling you, Don Kent was a tremendous guy, and he was a teacher at heart. If you hang around with Don Kent, you learn something. I guarantee you that. Yeah. So did I. In fact, when we teamed up, he says, "Here's the deal, Jerry. When you come out, you're the boss. You got the big mouth. You shoot your mouth off. You tell them what to do. But when the match starts, I'm the boss. You listen to me. It works for me.
So, you know,
I'd come out as soon as the bell rang, the management changed.
he was so underrated, though, around the country.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, and
he was part of the WWA.
He was wrestling babyface. And all of a sudden, he threw drop kicks as good as Fred Curry. And I was shocked. And Don Kent just looked to me like a drop kick kind of a guy. And I mean, he was up there with both feet. Kabing, kabing, kabing. I was just amazed. He could do everything. I mean, I guess heels don't usually throw drop kicks, but when he was a baby face, he was right out there. He was superb.
I mean, Don, again, Don, when I went up to Detroit, kind of like talked my way into it. was chic, but Don, for some reason, took a liking to me, and he helped me so much. And you know, I mean, helped get me into, you know, our trips to Newfoundland.
Yeah,
he got me into Puerto Rico.
We should do a story on that. The things that happened to us in Newfoundland, that could be a whole episode.
Well, you know. Newfoundland was good, but I had a drinking buddy up there.
Yeah, I was going to bring it up. Go ahead. I hate you. Hey, I'm a cheap drunk. If you want to talk about it, that's fine. You were there. I mean, you set it up. Go ahead and tell them about that story, if you would. About Louis Martinez singing, and then you getting me drunk on water.
We're talking about Newfoundland, Canada. So we're at a motel, and we taken in, Louis Martinez was in the room, Greg.
And the power went off. Sorry. The power went off on a hot day. Sorry.
Anyway, we had our drinks, and, Greg, you know, was like, well, I don't drink. It's like, oh, really? You know, so we kept talking to him. And so I can't remember if he went down to get something.
I went after the bathroom or someplace. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I filled up a bottle with water and one of the liquor bottles. And so I got, you know, we kept at him, me and Louis both. And come on, you got to drink with it. You got to be one of the boys. So finally, you know, Greg relented, like, oh, okay, I don't really don't want to do this. But so we just told him a little bit at a time, you know, that this will. You'll start feeling the effects, you know, but it takes a little bit, but you'll start feeling the effects of the alcohol and, you know, just drink it and you'll be okay. So we kept talking to him and Greg's like, wow, I think I'm getting a little bit of a buzz off of this.
On water. that was laced a little bit with alcohol.
Yeah. So mind control does work.
Yeah. Greg told me that story in Iowa too. Didn't you?
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
Hey, a receipt is coming sometime. I don't know when, but a receipt is coming. Okay.
Tony Guerrero is not paying, damn it.
Yeah.
What was it, 40 years ago? Playing.
Huh?
40 years ago, right?
No, this was 40, the dinner.
1980.
No, well, no, he what said part? That. We had him at dinner in Iowa, and Tony Guerrero said,
oh,
I'll eat with you, but I'm not paying.
I'm not buying. I had that English accent or Australian accent. I'm not buying.
You guys, you know, I Greg and I continuously go, and Jerry go to the Cauliflower Alley Club. You know, the camaraderie is unbelievable. I would suggest, if you guys have the time and the money, to come on out for the weekend. It's very reasonably priced, and you get to see all your old friends and stuff like that. And there's nothing like wrestling is the only family I got. So it you know, if I could get it in Iowa or at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame or at the Cauliflower Alley Club, they treat you well. The food is good. And, come on out, please do, and join us.
Well, and one thing that's great, and Scott mentioned about, you know, wrestling being families, Right, you do something like this where like we get you guys together. Some of you, like I said, hadn't seen each other for years, maybe even decades, but yet here you are talking like it was yesterday, right?
Exactly.
You just pick right back up, like no time was missed, and that's why I love doing this podcast, right? Because you guys all have stories to tell, and I love hearing you guys you recollect these stories and remember back and share and I know it's hard, right, when we're doing a group like this with six to coordinate schedules, and I appreciate you guys all working with it to get it done, and it's just so much fun to do something like this and experience. And like Scott mentioned earlier, Mike, obviously I hone in on the WWA. That was I'm from Indiana. That's where my passion and my heart lies, and that's what I want to that's what I want to share with the world. And whether we talk about like earlier with Chris Carter or Wojo or any of you guys, I don't know. I think the WWA needs to be held right up there with pretty much any territory in their prime. I think it needs a little more recognition, and I appreciate you guys, coming together and helping support that and sharing the stories. So, as we know, I won't, again, I'm not gonna keep you guys all night. I know you guys could probably chat amongst yourselves for hours and hours and hours. But as we close out, does anybody want to? We'll go around the horn here, and everybody, anything you want to say, any last story or anything else? We'll start as I'm looking up here at the top. Greg Lake, you start us out here.
Yeah, I want to tell you about real quick Bruiser Brody stories because it happened
Sure.
in the WWA. I think
That's
I
right.
heard told you this about it, Dave.
Did you see Scott's shirt over here?
I'm sorry?
Scott's repping Bruiser Brody over here on his shirt there. Did you see that?
Oh, Bruiser Brody used to come in as King Kong Brody,
That's
and that's another story with the Bruiser thing. But
That's right.
anyway, real quickly, Dick had me work with Brody, and Brody, and I'm a little guy. He's like three times my size at the time. But anyway, he beat the. I kept trying to come back on him because that's what you're taught. Lou Klein back in 72 when I was training in 1872, it seemed like he would always say, always try to come back. Well, I tried to come back and Bruiser Brody beat the. He just, I literally beat the crap out of me. And it was, I mean, horrible. And then, but his big knee was really good. Now, flash forward about a month later, Dick puts me in with Brody again, but Mr. Smart Guy finally realizes don't come back on Brody. So I just did whatever he wanted to do, and he was fine. So first time stiff, second time, just do what he wants, you're fine. So I don't know, it was just kind of weird. But that's my story about the
That's sounds good. I'm gonna tell you about that.
I'm sorry.
I said, ask Undertaker about that.
Oh, really?
Coming back from Brody when he first started.
I think there's a
I think I
video
heard that.
of that too, as well. I think it was Texas or so when where it happened. Speaking of Bruiser Brody, I am responsible, and this is a shoot. I'm involved in one of the worst angles in the history of professional wrestling. And that is the fake stabbing of Jose Gonzalez, the man that murdered Bruiser Brody 2 years earlier. I worked for Onita, and he flew me to Puerto Rico. He didn't tell me what my job was. So I followed him into a building, and the first person I saw was Jose Gonzalez. I said, "Oh hell, this is going to be, there's going to be trouble." Anyhow, the Puerto Ricans, they did an angle. The Puerto Ricans, which were the baby faces, attacked Onita. He gigged. End of story. They all left the building, except for me there and a few other people. And that was when Onita took a blade and started cutting into his stomach as though he had been stabbed. And he's having me take pictures holding his guts like he had been stabbed. He couldn't get the blood out of his stomach from the razor blade cuts. It was just a trickle. So I had him take the blood off of the floor from gigging his head and put it on his chest. And I continued to take pictures, and like the very next day, they were on, those same pictures were on the front page of the Japanese newspaper, blaming Jose Gonzalez for trying to kill Onita 2 years later for a build up as for a big match. And all that, if you type my name in Google AI, it will type in Scott Romer, Onita, Bruiser Brody. It will describe the whole thing, and they call it the one of the worst angles in the history. I didn't expose it for 30 years later. The pictures, you know, I had brought a separate camera in, kept the pictures myself because it was very controversial. And, you know, there was Puerto Rican mob involved as well as Yakuza involved. And I figured 30 years later, it would be safe to expose those pictures. So I exposed them on YouTube, type in Scott Romer, Onita stabbing angle. Hannibal TV did that. You'll find it quite interesting. So thank you for having me anyhow, and good to see everybody.
Absolutely. And let's go right over. Stormy, any closing comments from you?
Well, I'm just happy to be a part of all this tonight. You know, got a chance to hear Bobby and John and Jerry and Scott, you know, and Greg. You know, we were good friends. And it was my honor to just be associated with the rest of you. And I follow you, Scott, on Facebook, and follow all your stories. And you're a very interesting guy, and you know so many people. So everybody, thank you so much. And Dave, thank you so much for bringing all of us back to life. We all really appreciate it.
Of course, of course. And let's go on around. John Richmond, Mr. Max, you close out here. What are you the strong, no, silent guy.
I appreciate you. Appreciate you putting this together, Dave.
Yeah.
Man, I got a quick story, if that's okay.
No, of course.
I was just green as grass, and I was working. Jerry was my partner, and we're working moose, and I think it was Bobo at the Tyndall Armory. And I'm green. I'm looking at all the girls in the stand. I'm up on the top. You know, I'm in the outside of the ring, and I'm looking around, not paying attention to nothing except the pretty blonde over there in the corner. And Moose stomps over to her and literally breaks my nose. Drop me to the floor. And I go down, and then Jerry comes out of the ring. He comes up and puts his hand around me. He goes, "That'll teach you." I remember that like it was yesterday. And I, you know, legit busting of the nose. And it was like, there you go. Start learning, you know. Right. But I just wanted to say, Jerry, thank you. I remember in your locker room, you were always really a settling force there for us green guys. And I appreciate you taking the time. Bobby, it was a pleasure working with you. Stormy, man, it's just, everybody here was just, you look back in the time machine of life, and lots happened since then. And those are really bringing up some good memories. And I want to thank you all for being a part of that, accepting me into that, to that group, you know, so appreciate it. Thanks, Dave.
Sure.
Hope we can do this again.
Absolutely. Okay. Moving on, Mr. Bobby Colt, close us out.
Again, like everyone else, I appreciate you doing this, bringing us all together after, I think Scott's the only one I've actually seen in the last probably 25, maybe 30 years.
That's because Scott's still very well traveled. He still gets out there.
Yeah.
He still makes the towns.
Yeah. Well, I see him here in Indianapolis at the shows here once in a while. So, yeah. But anyway, I it was good to see everybody. It brings back good memories. And you know, as been mentioned, you know, it's still a brotherhood, no matter what has occurred or whatever, and how many years has passed. Mm-hmm. You know, we're still part of something that's very special.
Absolutely.
So, and I appreciate it, and it was great to see all the guys again.
Yeah, I love all you guys, and thank you for all the memories. It's great.
That's right. And of course, like
thank
when
you,
we
Dave.
Introed in.
Thank you, Dave.
Sure. Last but absolutely never the least, Dr. Jerry Graham Jr., you get to close the whole ordeal out. Give us some of that wisdom.
Well, everybody has pretty much said what I was thinking. It's great to see everybody. You are all a very important part of my life. And you guys are always supportive. A lot of territories weren't like that, full of backstabbers and two-timers, but we always had a pretty good, solid crew in the WWA. We 8 miles out of his way because I had car trouble. There's a lot of guys wouldn't have done that, but I just thought I'd throw that in today. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, my friend. Thank
you. Oh, real quick, David, plug my book, please. It's a tribute to the
Read it. Read it.
And yeah. Greg is in it, and so is
I'm so dumb. Dr. I read his book, Brown. And I thought that angle was that you just described was a work. I didn't know what he said. Didn't you read in my book? I said, yeah, wasn't that a work? He said, no, it was a shoot.
It's a good book. I've read it twice.
Yeah. I got a where here it is. Right here by me. I got my you don't know if you can see it because of my background. Now you can't see it, can you? Hey, Corda. I've got my copy right here.
Okay, it's called When It Was My Life on Both Sides of the Camera.
Yeah.
By Scott Romer and acclaimed author John Cosper.
That's right. And you can get this, right? You can get it, Scott. You can get it on Amazon if you want to, right? If you need to. But if you can catch Scott out and one of his stops, you can get one from Scott himself that he'll autograph for you, right?
I'll autograph it. Yeah. $5, $20 on Amazon, $25 through me. But I'll autograph it. And I got to take it to the post office and stand in line, so it's worth it to sell a book.
That's right, and
read it twice.
That's right,
I read it twice.
Highly recommended, especially right like again, like we're talking WWA. So if you're a fan of the WWA, it's highly recommended to get your copy of that. But guys, this has been a pleasure. Like I said, I had to kind of keep it checked because I mean, we could talk for hours. It would probably never stop if we wanted to let it go. So therefore, I think we've got to do it again sometime. And mix in some new, some other faces.
Available on all streaming platforms, it's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here. Lots of new stuff happening here at WrestleCopia. If you haven't checked out our website at WrestleCopia.com, it's a great way to keep up with the latest episodes of all of your favorite Copia programming, from the Wrestling Memory Grenade to Regional Wrestling with the Territory Talk, the Wrestling Stoop with the legendary Bob Roop, and of course all of those programs also available at your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And if you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the Copia world, all the latest news, random thoughts, fun videos, pictures, and more, make sure to join the more than 33,000 followers over at facebook.com/wrestlinggrenade. Don't be left out. And last, but definitely not least, it's what keeps the entire machine going. I'm talking about patreon.com/wrestlecopia. We appreciate your support in helping us pay the bills to keep the WrestleCopia Podcast Network running and enabling us to continue to bring you all the quality programming that we offer.
All right, and thank you to all of those guys for coming on and joining me for the special occasion. Hopefully you enjoyed that. And I do advise to go over to YouTube, subscribe to me there. You can see all kinds of classic wrestling content, plus my various podcasts. Plus, you can see the video version of this episode with all the guys here in the 80s reunion. So go check that out. Also, make sure you follow me on social media. I'm on all the platforms. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or at The Dave Dynasty and you can find me. And also go check out all the WrestleCopia Network of Podcasts. You can find the individual podcasts on your favorite platforms or you can visit WrestleCopia.com. Be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Visit ClassicWrestling.net to sign up for your account and then download the app on all of your smart devices. All right, like I said, make sure you follow me on social media. Keep an eye there as I will soon be announcing
my guest for the next episode. Guys, thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening. Thank you to everybody for coming on and being part of this 80s WWE reunion. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you share it. Tell all your friends. And wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.